Okay, I want to speak about the main theme of this parsha. And we're going to explain quite a few different things, but all in light of one major understanding of what's going on over here. Let me start with a lot of questions. First question. You're all familiar with the famous Rashi, Vayisrotzitzu Abonim Bekirba. Whenever Rivka passed by a Beis Avodah Zarah, Esav wanted to go out. Whenever she passed by a Beis Medrash, Yaakov wanted to go out, and she didn't know what's going on. There's a kid who has, you know, split personality or whatever. Very nice Rashi, except it seems to contradict the entire foundation of Yiddishkeit. The entire foundation of Yiddishkeit is that people have free choice, and they are not predestined to be good or bad. They have the choice to be good or bad. And if Yaakov and Esav already before birth, Yaakov was going out to learn Torah and Esav was going out to serve Avodah Zarah, then what kind of free choice do they have? One was destined to be a tzaddik and one destined to be a rasha. So why should Esav be punished for being a rasha and Yaakov be rewarded for being a tzaddik? They were predestined to be that, like robots. So that contradicts the entire foundation of Yiddishkeit, this Rashi. Besides that, it contradicts the Gemara too. Because the Gemara says that Rebbe and Antoninus, Rebbe was the Nasi of Klal Yisrael, and Antoninus was the Roman Caesar, and Antoninus was a tzaddik, and he was a descendant of Esav. And Rebbe and Antoninus would learn secretly together, because if the Romans found out that their Caesar was learning Torah, they would not be very happy. They used to learn privately, and they had many arguments which the Gemara speaks about. One of their debates was, when does the Yetzer Hara enter a person? Rebbe said it enters on conception. As soon as you conceive, you have a Yetzer Hara. And Antonina said, no, the Yetzer Hara does not come to a person until birth. There's no Yetzer Hara before birth. And in the end, Antoninus proved to Rebbe from Psukim that he was right. So the final decision is that there's no Yetzer Hara before birth. If that's the case, why is Esav trying to go out and to be over to Avodah Zarah? If he has no Yetzer Hara, what would be pulling him to Avodah Zarah? It's obvious that he did have a Yetzer Hara. So you see, you do have a Yetzer Hara before birth, which is against his Gemara. So aside from being against the whole Torah, it's also against the Gemara. Next question. So right way before birth, these two youngsters were diametrically opposed. This guy is an Oved Avodah Zarah, this guy is learning Torah. Then it says they were born, and Rashi brings down a Chazal that until they were 13, nobody really noticed the difference between them. And then when they were 13, this one went out to the forest to hunt, and this one went to the Beis Medrash to sit and learn. What happened for 13 years? Before they were born, they were diametrically opposed. All of a sudden, they come out and they're the same. And not only that, on the day of their bar mitzvah, mamish, all of a sudden they change to be different. It doesn't work like that. People don't just change in a day. And nobody noticed anything before, and now all of a sudden they notice. What's going on? Okay, so now at least at 13, right, it's noticeable that they're very different children. One's a little tzaddik and one's a hunter. So how come Yitzchak Avinu loved Esav and wanted to give him the bracha? Didn't he know that he had a child who's a tzaddik and one that's at least questionable? Okay. And you'll say, okay, but Esav still wasn't a rasha. He was a hunter. He could have been a frum hunter, right? He learned in the forest, and he, what's it called, and he kept mitzvahs, and he just was a hunter. But it says that Avraham Avinu died 5 years early. He was supposed to live to be 180, and he died at 175, in order that he should not see Esav going out the Tarbus Rah. Because when Esav was 15 years old, he celebrated his 15th birthday by doing three Averis. Gili Arayah, Shvichas Domen, and Avodah Zarah. And Avraham Avinu had to die in order not to see that. And Yitzchak couldn't see it. Obviously, if Avraham was alive, he would have noticed it. And Yitzchak didn't notice it. What kind of tzaddik, you sold Olam as Yitzchak, doesn't even know what his children are? Can't notice that Esav's a Rosh? And I'll tell you, he did notice that Esav was different than Yaakov in a negative way. Because Rashi says that when Yaakov came in impersonating Esav, he slipped up twice and gave Yitzchak the feeling that this is not Esav. The first time he said, Yitzchak asked him, how did you come back so fast? And he said, Ki hikra Hashem elokecha lefanai. Hashem made the animal come before me pretty quick. Yitzchak said, I never heard Esav say Shem Hashem. This can't be Esav. It's a guy who mentions God's name. Here you know you have a son who doesn't mention God's name, and you have a son that you know sits and learns Torah all day, and you want to give the bracha to the guy who doesn't mention God's name? Second slip up, he said, Yakum no avi, please get up. And Yitzchak said, I never heard my son Esav say please or thank you. He doesn't use that, that's not how he speaks. He's very gruff. So here you have a son who's not polite, right? Doesn't say please and thank you. You have a son who never mentions God's name, and that's the one you want to give a bracha to. And lastly, if Rivka did notice this, why did she have to go through this whole thing of fooling Yitzchak to thinking that Yaakov was Esav? Why don't you just walk in and say, Yitzchak, we got to sit down and have a talk. You see, you think this Esav is not so bad. I'm telling you, the guy's a Russia. Why couldn't she tell her husband? I think the Ramban says that she was intimidated. She was always afraid of her husband. From the first time that she saw him, she fell off the camel. He was a scary guy. Pachad Yitzchak. But I really don't understand that Ramban, because in the end of the Parsha, Rivka tells Yitzchak in no uncertain terms that if Yaakov marries one of the Bnos HaKnani, Ein li katzti b'chayoi. She was very clear what she wanted Yaakov to do and what she wanted Yitzchak to do, send Yaakov away. So obviously by the end of the Seder, she got a lot of guts. Right? What happened at the beginning of the Seder? Why couldn't she tell him? Okay, in order to answer all these questions, and there are separate answers to all of them, I'm going to give you one answer that gives you a thread to understand this parasha that answers all these questions. I think that's better than giving you separate answers to the questions. But in order to do that, we need a little bit of a preface. First, we're going to start with two Rambams that you'll see seemingly contradict each other. And it's very difficult to say the Rambam argues with himself. The Rambam says like this. This is in Perek Hay from Hilchas Tshuva. Halacha Aleph. Oh no, Halacha Beis. Al Yavar B'machshavtecha, Dover Zeh. The Rambam says, don't even entertain the thought. Sha'omrim Tipshei Umos Ha'olam, which foolish Goyim say. The Rov Golmei B'nei Israel, and unrefined Jews who don't know too much, say the following. Shakadosh Baruch Hu gozer al ha'adam mitchilas b'riyoso li'ol tzadik ha'rasha. That God predetermines, pre-decrees on a person, predetermines who's going to be a tzadik and who's going to be a rasha. And it's decreed on you whether you're going to be a tzadik or a rasha even before you're born. Ein hadover kein, says the Rambam. It's not true. Ela kol adam roi lo lios tzadik kemoshe Rabbeinu o rasha ki yaravam. Every person can be a tzadik like Moshe Rabbeinu or a rasha like Yaravam ben Nevat. It's your choice. Nothing pushes you. V'chein, and similarly, o chacham o sacho. You can be as smart or as foolish as you want to be. It's your choice. O rachman o achzori. You can be as cruel or as merciful. O kilai o shua, or stingy, or what's it called? What's the opposite? Stingy?
Generous.
What?
Generous.
Generous.
How does Rambam
say
those? Kilai or what?
Kilai o shua. The chain shar kol adeos, and the same thing goes with all other midos. No one ain lo mishi chafu. No one forces you to one side or the other. The low gozer love, no one decrees on you. The low misha moshko la echad mishne adrachim, nothing pulls you to one side or the other. Elohu me'atzmo midaito notel ezaderashi yirtze. What determines these things? Your free choice. You yourself can choose to be a tzaddik, a rasha, wise or foolish, cruel merciful, and so on. Okay, pretty categoric. All midos are your free choice. They are not predetermined, predecreed. Nothing pulls you to one side or the other. Clear? And remember, let me read you another Rambam. This Rambam is Perek Rishon from Hilchos Deos. Hilchos Deos is mostly Bein Adam L'Chaveiro Midos. The Rambam says like this: Deos harbe yesh lekol echad ve'echad ne adam v'zu mishuna mizu rechoka mizu biyoser. People are different. They have different qualities, character traits, and they can be mamish from one extreme to the other. And he goes to explain, there's some people who are very quick to get angry. That's their nature. And some people never get angry. That's their nature. Some people are very generous by nature. Some people are very stingy by nature. Some people are cruel. Some people are merciful. The yesh bein called deya v'deya harechoka mimenu b'kseh ha'acher deyos bein yos zu rechoka mizu. And it's not just extremes. There's a lot in between. People who are somewhat cruel, somewhat merciful, somewhat generous, all different gradations. Now comes the Rambam. Where do they come from? Where do all these different midos come from? So you would expect, based on what I told you the first Rambam, where do they come from? Your free choice. You choose to be this way or that way. Now the Rambam says the following. V'chol ha-deos. Some of them are part of your very innate nature from when you are conceived, when you're created. You were created to be cruel, merciful, and so on. They're part of your nature. That openly contradicts what the Rambam said before, that in these exact same things that he's talking about, merciful, cruel, and so on, nothing pulls you, nothing decrees upon you, it's all your free choice. Here he says, could be that that's the way you were created. The yesh mehem, she'ein on the other, some of them aren't part of your actual created nature. Elalamad osam yacherim, right? Some of them, he says, what's it called? V'yesh mehem deos shetivo shel adam zeh mechuven v'asid lekabelo some in the hera yosef mishara deos. Some of them you have a predilection to. You're pulled towards that side. It's not part of your nature from when you were created, but you have a natia, right? You're pulled more to this midah or that midah. That goes against the Rambam and says nothing pulls you to one side or the other. V'yesh mehem, some of them, some of them you can learn from other people. Or you can choose them on your own. Total contradiction. Here the Rambam says, don't even entertain the thought that anything is gozer on you or creates you to be a tzaddik, a rasha, or any of the other midos. You can choose what you want to be, and nothing forces you, nothing pulls you to either side. And here the Rambam says, people are different. Where does it come from? By creation, you're created different. And he mentions the same midos. You can be cruel, merciful, stingy, generous. Where does it come from? Either that's your nature by creation, or you're pulled to one side because you have a predilection towards that. And some of them you learn from other people, and some of them you choose on your own. It's a complete contradiction. In addition, there's another question in this Rambam. The Gemara says what the Rambam says in the first thing. The Gemara says that when somebody's conceived, an angel called Duma brings that first blastula, that's the forming embryo, before God. It doesn't mean he takes him out of the mother's womb and brings it before God. It means he presents this, a malach presents this before the Ribbono Shel Olam, and says, what's going to be with this child? Is he going to be, strong or weak? Handsome or ugly? Pretty or ugly, right? Rich or poor? What else? Smart or or dumb? But one thing it doesn't say, righteous or wicked. That's up to a person. But all those other things are decreed. One of them is smart or dumb. The Rambam says you can be as smart or dual or foolish as much as you want. That doesn't seem to be that it's decreed. The Gemara says it is. The Gemara says the only thing that isn't decreed is if you're a tzaddik or a rasha. The answer is very obvious. The Rambams are talking about two different things. The Rambam, the first one that I told you, the second one I told you, is talking about character traits. The second one is talking about behavior. Let me explain what I mean. It is for sure a fact that people are created different, with different character traits. There's no shaila. That it's not a result of your choice. You're not born into this world pariv, and then you make choices of what kind of character you want to have. You're born with a character. Little babies are brought home. They could be twins. One is very calm, cool, collected. You can throw him around the room, he doesn't whimper. If you throw him around too much, he won't whimper at all. And the other one, every minute is crying and upset and nothing is good. Little baby. You tell me, well, this one chose to be a nice, calm kid, and this one chose, no, that's the way they were born. Send little kids to Gan. Some of them, what's it called, come home, missing a shoe, missing their lunch. What happened? They gave it to their friends. And some of them come home with some of the people's lunch and shoes or whatever, because they took it from their friends. Some are little stingy little kids, some are very generous little kids. It's, you have little brothers or sisters, see the difference? They don't have characters when they're little kids. They chose them. That's the way they were born. Right? You can have children that have a predilection to cruelty. They go around pulling the wings off of flies or whatever, and what's it called? And other ones that faint at the sight of blood. It's different characters, different people. That's for sure the way it is. No shaila. They didn't make the choice, like the Rambam says. But there is no character trait that is good or bad. Give me an example. Let's say I was born with a netiya towards cruelty. Right? I love the sight of blood. I love, what's it called, you know, pulling wings off of flies or whatever. And you were born with a netiya towards being squeamish and merciful. Okay? With two different natures. We didn't choose them. That's the way the Rabbanu Shem created me. Created me to be easier to be cruel, and you easier to be merciful. Okay, we're both walking down the street, and a terrorist trips and falls at our legs. He just went and killed 200 innocent people. Okay, and he wants to get up now because he can go kill 200 more innocent people. He's on his way to go bomb another bus. And we are walking to baseball practice, and we have baseball bats in our hands. And this terrorist falls at our feet. What would be the proper behavior at that moment? To help him up and put him on his way, or to bat his brains out, right, and make sure that he'll never kill anybody else, innocent people? What would you say the proper reaction and behavior at the moment is? Anybody think to help him up? No. Okay, unless you belong to the ACLU maybe, but if you don't belong to the ACLU, then probably helping him up and putting him on his way is not the proper thing. Now, I have an atiyah towards cruelty. It's going to be easy for me to take that baseball bat and batter that guy's skull. You, who are very merciful, are going to have a hard time to do what's right. But if you want to do what's right, you're going to have to overcome your mercy, right, and realize that battering in his brains is having mercy on the poor victims that he could create, and therefore right now you have to be cruel. Okay? So I'm going to have an easier time to be a tzaddik and do what's right, and you're going to have a harder time. Now we're walking down the street again. We just battered in that guy's brains. Okay? You had a hard time doing it. I had an easy time doing it. And now, a little old lady who's walking across the street trips and falls at our feet. Now, what would be the proper response? Batter in her brains too? Or help her up and send her on her way? Okay? Obviously, helping her up and sending her on her way. You're going to have an easy time to do that because you're by nature merciful. I'd love to batter her brains in because I have an atiyah towards cruelty, but I'm going to have to overpower that in this situation. It's not really nice to batter in little old lady's brains, right? So I should pick her up and send her on her way. What do you see from that? Being cruel or merciful is not good or bad. It's parav. Depends on the situation. There are times when being cruel is the proper behavior, and somebody who's born with an atir towards mercy is going to have a hard time doing that, and somebody born with an atir towards cruelty is going to have an easy time to do that. And sometimes being merciful is the proper behavior, and the person who has an atir to cruelty is going to have a hard time doing that, and the other person have an easy time. There is no midah that is good or bad. That's what the Rambam's talking about in the first case. No one forces you to choose how to use your midos. Yes, you have different midos, and some of them are from conception. But whether you use them or you suppress them, and how you use them, depends on your free choice. No one forces you or pushes you in any way to use your midos, good or bad. Therefore, a tzaddik or a rosh depends on how you use those midos, not what midos you have. No one's born a tzaddik or a rosh because they're born with cruelty and with what's it called, with short tempers or whatever. No, you can suppress that. You can use it when it's necessary. Sometimes it's good to get angry. So that the second Rambam is talking about midos, character traits. They're parith, and they are predetermined. The second Rambam is talking about behavior, how you use those character traits. Nobody forces you one way or the other. Therefore, the Rambam that says you can be as wise or foolish is talking about behavior, not about IQ. The Gemara is talking about IQ. Your IQ is determined when you're born. You could change it a little bit, but if you're born with a 50 IQ, you're not going to be Einstein. Okay, I guarantee it. No matter how many courses you take or how much you build up your brain, right, you're still not going to be a really smart person. But who cares? That doesn't make you righteous or wicked. There are many unintelligent people who are very righteous and many intelligent people who are very wicked. The Rambam's talking about something else. The Gemara says, Chacham o tipesh. A tipesh is an idiot. Means you have low intellect. The Rambam's talking about a sachol. A sachol is a foolish person. Foolish means you could be intelligent, but you act like a fool. You act in a foolish way. That's not determined. If you're going to act foolish or you're going to act wise, whether you're going to be smart or stupid, that is decreed. Different thing. You can be smart and act foolishly, and you can be stupid and act wisely. Two different things. Okay. Now, there's only one problem with all of this. It's still not really fair. Because if I was born with an atiya to be cruel, and you with an atiya to be merciful, of all the situations in life, how many require a person to be cruel? Probably a very small percentage. You usually don't have terrorists falling at your feet that the mitzvah is to batter in their brains. Usually it's the little old ladies that are tripping around. Or, right, it's 90% of the time it's good to be merciful. Only 10% of the time is there an inyan to be what's it called, cruel. So my nature is to be cruel. I'm going to have to suppress my nature 90% of the time to be a tzaddik and only use my nature 10% of the time. Whereas you're going to have to suppress your nature 10% of the time in being merciful and not being merciful because it's proper to be cruel, but 90% of the time you're going to be able to use your nature in a proper way. So you have an easier time being a tzaddik than me. I have a harder time being a tzaddik. So there are three answers to that question. Firstly, if we only had one character trait, that would be a good question. But we're made up of a myriad of character traits. I may be more a nota to be cruel, but I'm also more nota to be generous. So in the generous kind of, and you're more nota to be merciful, but you're more nota to be stingy. So in the stingy generous, I have the 90% easy time, you have the 10% easy time, 90% hard time. When it comes to cruelty and mercy, I have the 90% hard time, you have the 90% easy time. So it balances out. So that's not a good answer though, because there are situations where you know people who most of their innate character traits are negative. They're cruel, stingy, very, what's it called, quick to get angry. That's their nature. And the other people that have all the nice, good, natural characteristics, they're merciful, they're what's it called, generous, and they're calm and cool and collected. So what do we do with that? Second answer that makes it fair is that the Ribbono Shel Olam takes that in consideration. And he rewards you and punishes you according to how difficult it is in the situations you come to act properly. Example, I'm quick to anger and you're cool, calm, collected by nature. That's the way you were born. That's the way I was born. Okay? We both can choose to use our nature when it's good to get angry, right? Somebody comes and insults my parents and curses the Ribbono Shel Olam, I have to get angry. Right? So I have an easy time getting angry. You have a harder time to get angry. So I'm the bigger tzaddik. I have the easier way of being a tzaddik. You have to work on being a tzaddik in that respect. But stop getting angry for nothing, right? Somebody walks in the room and steps on your toes. Okay? So, you shouldn't get angry, right? You can control yourself. I have a harder time controlling myself, you have an easier time. So it evens out. What happens though, if somebody walks in the room, and they step on both of our toes, and we both lose control and go berserk? Who's gonna get punished more for losing their temper, me or you? You. My nature, God knows, my nature is to get angry. He created me like that. So he knows I have this handicap. So he's going to judge me much less harshly than you, who by nature are calm, cool, and collected, and you lost your temper, right? That's worse. Because you chose to lose your temper against your nature. That's much worse than me, that I chose not to control my nature, right, and suppress it. It's harder to suppress something than to use it naturally. What happens if we both control our temper and we don't get angry? Who's going to get more reward? Me. It's harder for me to control my temper. You, it's easy. You're by nature not an angry person. And the third way that it makes it equal is the Ribbono Shel Olam brings you the situations in life that you have to deal with. And he usually brings situations that fit your character. That's what it means that the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't bring nisyonos that a person can't handle. He brings nisyonos that fit what kind of character you have. And if he knows that you can't function with it, he doesn't punish you for it. If he knows it's beyond your control because of your nature. Okay, hold the question until we finish the idea. Okay, with that in mind, now we can go back to Yaakov and Esav. This is conjecture. I don't have any proof to this except a small proof. But I think that it's true. Even though the Ribbono Shel Olam already told Avraham, Ki bi Yitzchak yikori l'chazora. In Yitzchak, but not all of Yitzchak. Not all of Yitzchak's children would carry on the Mesorah of Avraham Avinu. But that didn't exclude Yaakov or Esav. Yitzchak could have had other children. In fact, the Medrash says Yitzchak really should have had 12 children, like Yaakov had. For various reasons, it didn't happen. But it could have been. And therefore, it's possible that both Yaakov and Esav could have been tzaddikim, or both of them could have been rishoyim. Yaakov Avinu had 12 children. They all were tzaddikim. And they all were different. And they had different roles. As the leaders of Klal Yisrael, there are two kinds of leaders. There's the Melech, who has one kind of leadership, physical in this world, who needs to be strong and tough, and the Kohen Gadol, who's more spiritual leader, has to be more calm, more spiritual, right? Two different kinds of leaders, both of them could be tzaddikim, but they have to be different. It was possible, okay, that Esav was given the character traits to be the head of the Malachim of Klal Yisrael, that side of Klal Yisrael, the ones who would go out and fight and bring justice to the world like a melech. And that for that you need to be cruel, have a netiyah towards cruelty, towards harshness, and Yaakov would have been the one to be the Kohen Gadol. And all the Kohanim would come from Yaakov. Where is my small proof to that? There was another human being in history who had the same character traits as Esav. David HaMelech. Admoni v'yefei inayim. So you see that Esav had the character traits of a melech. except that he didn't use them the right way. But if he had used them the right way, he could have been a tzaddik, a melech. And therefore, when it says that they were fighting, whenever Rivka passed by a base of Avodah Zorah, Esav wanted to go out. It doesn't say he wanted to go out and be over the Avodah Zorah. There's no medrash that says that, to the best of my knowledge. If it does, big question. It doesn't say that. It says he wanted to go out. That's it. It doesn't say why. And whenever she passed by a base medrash, it says Yaakov wanted to go out. It doesn't say why. It doesn't say he wanted to learn Torah. Which means the following. Esav was born with a very strong character of being attracted to this world, and you could be attracted to this world and fight and make justice in the world, but a melech is involved in this world, Gashmias. Esav was attracted to Gashmias. That doesn't mean he's bad. It means he can make the world a very good place to live. And with justice and with harshness and with cruelty to destroy the evil in this world. That's what a melech is supposed to do. Melech is a more Gashmiistic personality. Where's the most Gashmiistic place in the world? Avodah Zorah. You take spiritual things and turn it into physical things. Esav, like a magnet, was attracted to those places. Not to be a Rasha, not to serve Avodah Zorah, perhaps. He could have been attracted to those places and used it for the good or the bad. In fact, the Shach, the Sifsei Kohen, the Talmidim of the Arizal, and Chumash, asked, well, it says, every time Rivka passed by a base of Avodah Zorah, Esav wanted to go out. What was she doing there? What in the world was Rivka doing by a base of Avodah Zorah? You're not allowed to be around those places. Says the Shach, Rivka grew up amongst over the Avodah Zorah. She knew them. And she went there to be Makariv them. She knew who they were. So maybe Esav wanted to go out and be Makariv too. He didn't want to go and for any purpose. He was attracted to that place. But you could be a tzaddik in that place or a rosh in that place. You could be over the Avodah Zorah, you could destroy the Avodah Zorah. That's what a melech is supposed to do. But you have the choice. Didn't say Esav's a rasha. Esav was just different, and he had the qualities that attracted him to the more physical places in the world. Yaakov, on the other hand, had the qualities of a kohen. He's attracted to spiritual places. What's the most spiritual place of Beis Medrash? But that doesn't mean that you're going to be a tzaddik if you're attracted to Beis Medrash. You could be attracted to Beis Medrash because you don't like to work. And it's a nice place, you know, it's a nice atmosphere. So I'll walk around, drink some coffee, speak a little Lashon Hara, but I just like the atmosphere of this more spiritual atmosphere. I don't like physical things. I don't like to work. So if you're in a Beis Medrash with that attitude, you are definitely not a tzaddik. So Yaakov couldn't want to go out because he enjoys that environment. He didn't do it for any special reason. He did it because his nature attracted him to that place. That's all it means. It has nothing to do with the Yetzer Hara or Yetzer HaTov. It had to do with what he was by nature, which could be used for the good or for the bad. Nothing that determined whether he's going to be good or bad. Different people. And it could be the reason that they were given those different qualities, because they both could have used it for the good, or both could have used it for the bad. Or one for the good and one for the bad, and that's what happened in the end. But that was their free choice. And therefore, it says that when they were born, nobody took notice. Not that they weren't different. They were different, but they were little kids. So what's to take difference of? It doesn't say anything about the child. It just says he's a different child. This one is more note to physical. This one's more note to the spiritual. It doesn't make them tzaddikim or rishayim. It makes them different children. When did they start to take notice? When they were 13 and now they had free choice. And they started making choices. And Esav chose to go into the forest. And Yaakov chose to go learn Torah. Now there was a difference. Now it was behavior. It wasn't any more midos and character traits. Now, next thing. So therefore, Yitzchak recognized that Esav was different than Yaakov. But he saw in Esav his melech. Esav's going to be the melech of my future people. Yaakov's going to be the Kohen. And the Kohanim are going to come from Yaakov, the Malachim are going to come from Esav. And therefore, Yitzchak knew that Esav doesn't say please and thank you, because that's not his nature. Nature of a king is to be tough. Doesn't go around saying, okay, he hasn't yet honed it in to know when yes to say, to go against his nature. But that's his nature. His nature is not to mention God's name. And this the Maharal says. Why? Because Esav, and according to his nature and his role, he's going to be the melech. He has to go around places that are not tar. He has to be around physical places in the forest, lots of killing animals. And therefore, there's many places where he's not allowed to mention God's name. So he's machmer. He doesn't mention God's name ever. Not to mention the wrong place. Yaakov Avinu sits on base medrash all day. Why shouldn't he mention God's name? So Yitzchak didn't see it as a negative. He saw that this is part of his role. The three Averas that he did, which Avraham Avinu had to die, those three Averas, one of them for sure, you can see, could be interpreted not as evil, but adarava, as a tremendous mitzvah. What were the three Averas? He killed somebody, he seduced a Nara Murasa, right? And he, who was engaged, an engaged woman, he seduced her, and he was over at Avodah Zarah. Let's take the one that's obvious, what I'm telling you, and then you have to say the other one's the same thing, even though it's a little bit of a kvetch. Who did he kill? Nimrod. Nimrod was the arch enemy of God, the arch Russia of the world. If somebody had killed Hitler, would they be a hero or a Russia? A hero. He rid the world of this tyrant who was wreaking havoc in the world. Couldn't you see Yitzchak saying, wow, that's what kings do. Kings kill Rishoyim. My little king, 15 years old, killed Nimrod, the worst, Russia in the world. He's a hero. So why, Taka, wasn't he a hero? Because you're only a tzaddik if you kill Nimrod because you want to rid the world of a Russia. But if you kill Nimrod because you want his suit, his clothing, his uniform, if you killed Hitler because you want his uniform, you're a murderer. The Kavana makes it either a mitzvah or an avera. So couldn't you see, though, that Esau could have fooled himself and surely fooled his father, that I did this l'shem shamayim. I killed Nimrod. So let's see now the other ones. He seduced a Nara Murasa. First of all, Tosus points out, before the Torah was given, there was no such thing as a Nara, an engaged woman being married. She wasn't married. Marriage is only when the husband and wife live together. But just the betrothal is only exists after the Torah given. Before the Torah was given, there was no such thing as erusin, no such thing as giving a ring and marrying. Right? It was only after a physical relationship. So this woman was engaged to be married to an over that one is Zara. Couldn't you see Esau fooling himself, or at least fooling his father, and saying, "Look, kings do things that are not 100%, you know, ay 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 when it comes to tznias. Look through history." David HaMelech, whatever. But there's a need for that. A Melech has to be a porridge getter. I see this poor woman is engaged to an Oved Avodah Zarah. And if she goes and consummates the marriage, that's the end of her life. I'm the son of Yitzchak, the grandson of Avraham. Wouldn't it be better if I was Makariv this woman? So he's Makariv for a little bit too much. And don't you think that there are people like that in the world? Without mentioning any or hinting to anybody or anything, there are people who, in the name of Kiruv, okay, hugged women, kissed women, or whatever, thinking these makar of them. Maybe he was. But wasn't 100% sanua or mutter. So Esav, right, in the name of Kiruv, seduced this woman to get her away from Avodah Zarah to be his pilegesh, whatever. Couldn't you see him thinking that, well, that's what kings do. Kings are not always 100% tzanua. Look through history. Jewish kings. That's the way the world is. And the last thing that he, what's it called, served Avodah Zarah, do you know that during the 1950s, when a lot of the Jewish children that were in, what's it called, the Holocaust and didn't have parents, were taken by the church and put into convents and monasteries, and the Gedolim permitted young yeshiva boys and girls to go in disguised as goyim, or people who want to convert, to get into these monasteries and to get the children out. And they were double agents. They masqueraded as Ovdei Avodah Zarah to get the children out. Couldn't you see Esav saying, look, someday I'm going to have to destroy this Avodah Zarah. I have to infiltrate it. So he went to be Ovdei Avodah Zarah, not because he really believed in it. This is where Yitzchak could see it. But because he has to infiltrate these places, because eventually he's going to destroy them. That's what a king does.
I understand.
Oh, Esau goes, pretends that he's part of them to infiltrate the group, so later on he'll be able to destroy it from within. So it's possible, again, the first one is for clear. The other ones, therefore, you have to say is similar. So Yitzchak, Esav could have fooled his father into thinking that he did these things, L'shem Shamayim. All of them are things that a king would do. The type of thing that kings would do. Except Esav really did them, not L'shem Shamayim. So he's a Russian. And therefore the bracha that Yitzchak wanted to give was the bracha of Tala Shamayim, Mishmanei Haaretz, Gashmias, Yavducha Amim. Who's going to get that bracha? Yaakov, the Kohen? Or Esav, the Melech? Of course the Melech. That's why Yitzchak wanted to give him the bracha. The only, and until Yitzchak saw Yaakov come in, disguised as Esav, which we'll get to, let's backtrack. So why didn't Rivka go in and say, your son Esav is not the Melech, he's not doing these things L'shem Shamayim, he's a Rosh HaGomer, right? Why didn't Rivka recognize it and Yitzchak didn't? Because the halacha is you have to give people a benefit of the doubt. Don lekaf schus, if there's any doubt. Yitzchak, his whole life, was only around people who were honest, tzaddikim. He couldn't imagine somebody who's acting this way and a faker. He didn't grow up like that. So he had to give him a doubt, he had to halachically give him kaf schus. It was at least a doubt. But Rivka grew up amongst fakers. Her father was one, her brother was one. She could smell one a mile away, there was no doubt. She didn't have to give Esav a don lekaf schus. She saw clearly he's a Russia. Avram, the same thing. He also grew up like that. He could smell a faker a mile away. He had to die. But Yitzchak had to give Esav don lekaf schus. So then why didn't Rivka go in and tell Yitzchak, you're making a mistake? Because, says Rosham Shem Foil Hirsch, Yitzchak would have believed Rivka. And he would not have given the bracha to Esav. But he wouldn't have given it to Yaakov either. At least not with a full heart, because in his mind, Yaakov was the Kohen. What in the world is he going to do with this bracha? This nice Nebuchadnezzar little guy is going to be Avducha Amim, Ishtachavu L'Chaliumim. What kind of bracha is this for my Nebuchadnezzar, right, nice, really Kohen Gadol kind of kid? Therefore, she sent Yaakov in to convince Yitzchak that when necessary, he could act like Esav too. He had both qualities. And therefore he could fool Yitzchak into thinking he's Esav. And that's what Yitzchak said. Hakol kol Yaakov vayodai midei Esav. And he gave him a bracha because he didn't recognize him. What he should have said, I don't know who this kid is, I'm not giving any brachas. He gave him the bracha because he didn't recognize, meaning, I see that one of my children could have both midos. He could have the yodaim of Esav and the kol of Yaakov. That means that it's not going to be that one's going to be the melech and one's going to be the kohen. But the melech and the kohen are going to come from one of them. And this one has both qualities. So he gave him the bracha. And later on he saw why it was necessary, because Esav was completely possible. Esav, he saw Gehenna open, and he saw that Esav was not using his qualities to be the Melech, he was a Rasha. And he was completely, pushed away, and Yaakov was, everything would come from Yaakov, both the Melochim and the Kohanim. And that's why Yaakov had to prove that to his father to get the bracha. That necessary, he could muster up the midos of Esav when necessary and be an Esav and fool his father. And then he gave him the bracha with a full heart. Because the bracha was meant for the Esav character, not for the Yaakov character. But if this person could have both, then he deserves the bracha. That's the idea. And she couldn't tell him that because he would accept it, but he wouldn't accept that Yaakov could deserve this bracha. He would just accept that Esav didn't. But one world might give this bracha to Yaakov. So she sent him in to prove to his father that when necessary, he could also have the same character traits of Esav that are used by a melech for the good. Yaakov could do that too. And the melachim are going to come from him.